What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Monday. You know what that means. Welcome back to another episode of Monday Football Monday, presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL, because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. It might look a little different who's in the hosting chair today. That is, of course, because it is me, SB Nation NFL writer JP Acosta, here again with my buddy Mark Schofield, filling in for the ever wonderful RJ Ochoa. Shout out to RJ, who I know is listening to this. We will not be talking about the Cowboys because I know that we would say mean things, and we don't want to say mean things when you're gone. Mark, how you doing?
I think we should still talk about the Cowboys and say mean things. I mean, that's only fair. I thought we would just probably talk about cars for 35 minutes since RJ isn't here. That would give us an opportunity, but I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a really busy portion of the year with the NFL draft starting to ramp up. Pro days are wrapping up. We got the NCAA tournament still going on. And now it's starting to feel like everything's hitting like a climax point in sports, especially with the MLB season starting and the NBA starting to ramp up towards the playoffs. It feels like we're entering like the sports equinox moment, where like we're going to get a lot more stuff happening at the same time.
Yeah, this is starting to get into a pretty crazy time of year for us, because like you said, we've got March Madness right now. The men's and women's tournaments are fully underway. We've got MLB around the corner. And obviously, we're recording this. We're doing this on Monday. We're expecting a Shohei Ohtani press conference at some point today, or at least he's going to address the media at some point today, because there was that bizarre story that came out late last week about his interpreter and some sports betting and an astronomical sum of like $4.5 million out there. And so we'll expect to hear more on that because, again, MLB season is starting. NBA playoffs are coming. NHL playoffs are coming. Max Verstappen did not win a race in Australia this weekend.
So I know.
That was a bit surprising. So, yeah, we got a lot coming, man.
It feels like a landmark thing that Max Verstappen didn't win a race. I feel like that should open up.
It was amazing because I was watching it. I watch him on F1 TV. Alex Jakes is the sort of lap-by-lap commentator. I think we'll say that instead of play-by-play. And my wife was watching the first couple of laps because, it started at midnight here on the East Coast before, she turned in, but I stayed up for it. She was like, this guy is so excited. It's almost insulting, I think, to Max Verstappen, because he's just losing his mind that Verstappen on the second lap, it's right weird, just like caught fire and he had to retire. And it was just like, but you could understand why, because the first two races of the season, they just stopped talking about him. It was like, look, he's 29 seconds in front of everybody. Let's just focus on everything else. There was actually a race. Carlos Sainz won 2 weeks after an appendectomy. So I already lost my appendix years ago, but I guess if you're an F1 driver, you get the appendix out. Maybe you lose some weight. It makes you faster.
Yeah, it's like the Jordan flu game.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Sainz appendectomy race.
Yeah,
but the Sainz appendectomy race. We're here to talk about the NFL, and the biggest thing that just came out today, according to basically every NFL reporter, at the NFL owners' meetings, they have officially banned the hip drop tackle. The hip drop kind of went over a lot of waves in past season, with Mark Andrews being injured and getting a high ankle sprain due to a hip drop tackle. A lot of guys sort of falling due to injury from that style of tackle. But it really does kind of feel like this is a little bit of a slippery slope with giving referees more stuff to kind of legislate during the overall during the play-by-play moments of a game. Mark, what are your thoughts on the hip drop tackle being banned and giving it a 15-yard penalty?
I think a couple of things are worth noting. One, the NFLPA was apparently unanimously like against this. They did not want to see this ban come down. So I think that's an important bit of context. We understand that, look, this tackle has led to some injuries. Like you said, Mark Andrews, one of many players that, you know, offensive players, hip drop tackle comes, they have a lower leg injury, sometimes extreme lower leg injuries as a result. But then when you start, you know, as you said, given referees more to interpret on the fly, we can see what's coming, right? Third and 14, NFL playoff game, quarterback checks it down, running back tries to get into the open field to get a hip drop tackle or a tackle that looks awkward, well short of the first down marker late in the game, but then the flags fly. And suddenly what should have been a punted situation becomes a first and 10 because of a tackle that up until this point was legal. We know where this goes. We all know America's favorite game, the world's favorite game. What is a catch? Now we're going to get what is a hip drop tackle. And so, as you said, there's going to be a slippery slope here. I understand the injury risks. I think it's important to note that the NFLPA was against this. And now we'll see how I'm watching right now. Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network is playing the video that the NFL showed in a press conference of example hip drop tackles. And some are more extreme than others. There are certainly examples where it's like the player clearly twists himself around to fall on the offensive player's legs. Okay, that's one thing. But there are others that are just, they almost look like a regular tackle. So I'm very interested to see how this ends up getting implemented.
I would feel so much more confident about this rule being legislated correctly if the NFL had not bungled the roughing the passer penalty call for the last 3 years. I feel like because of that, it has created such a sour taste in fans and specifically defensive players' mouths that they cannot tackle anybody without getting penalized. I think the hip drop tackle is really hard to legislate within the minutia of a game because everybody's moving so fast. And now that you've eliminated being able to, you can't hit someone high. I'm not saying that anybody should ever get hit high, like intentionally. You've eliminated hitting somebody low with the hip drop tackle. And during the play-by-play of a game, you are never going to see a lot of people like execute pure form tackles during a game because it's so much different than what you see in practice. Because in practice, those people aren't actually trying to not get hit. During a game, they're trying not to take these hits. So it feels like the people who created the rule don't really understand how difficult it is to make a tackle in an NFL game, the physics and the force behind it. It's like when the roughing the passer penalty came out and it was like, you have to take your body weight off of him. And it's like, how?
Right.
How are you supposed to do that when you're falling onto somebody? That's gravity. You can't just like smooth criminal your way back up off of him. So I would have so much more confidence in this rule being legislated if previous iterations of rules in this style have been officiated and legislated correctly. But now we're putting more on NFL referees' plates when they've shown over the past few years that that might not be the best thing. People already hate refs. And so naturally, the biggest thing is to give them more stuff to do.
Right. And I think a couple of directions we could take this. One, as you said, defensive players, you can't hit high, which we obviously understand. You know, head injuries are certainly something that the NFL and frankly, football as a sport is working towards trying to reduce and eliminate. And we get that, but you can't hit low, whether it's, you know, now this hip drop tackle or some of the rules about tackle and below the waist, because we want to protect and prevent knee injuries, which again, we understand, but now we're getting to a point to bring up baseball. The MLB strike zone might still be bigger now than this sort of strike zone for a defensive player making a tackle. And so what are defensive players left to do? So that's part of it because, look, they've got a job to do. You've got to get players to the ground. And then you remember sort of the restrictions on live practices and hitting during practice and things like that. You might get a very small window to practice the right way to tackle and then hope that when it comes to the proverbial third and seven game on the line kind of moment, you can execute it right when very large human beings are moving at absurdly high rates of speed. Like there's a lot to go into it. And then we're asking referees to do this and to get it right with so much on the line from contracts to jobs. And yes, we can mention it, gambling, and it's a part-time job for them. Like, how do we square all of this? How do we sort of complete this circle? I don't see how. I would be much more in favor of it if there was eventually the decision to make NFL officiating sort of a full-time gig, where it's like, look, you do this year-round, you practice this year-round. But since they're not doing that, I know some have become sort of full-time NFL referees, but not everybody. It's going to be hard to get this right. And with so much on the line, mistakes are inevitably going to be made. People are inevitably going to be angry. And we know what the Twitter timeline is going to be the first time this is called.
So according to Mike Garofalo of NFL Network, he said Rich McKay made it clear multiple times that there's a difference between the hip drop tackle and the swivel hip drop tackle. The defensive player lifting himself off the ground and using his weight to fall on the offensive player is what they're working to eliminate. And in theory, like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
However, when you're a defensive back who's like 190 pounds,
right,
trying to tackle a 250-pound tight end, you're going to go in the air. Like, that's just, again, Isaac Newton wasn't wrong about a lot of stuff. And force and motion, that's a lot. That's one of those things he wasn't really wrong about, you know? So I truly wonder how they're going to legislate this rule when there's so many moving parts and so many, like, other variables defensively. That, like you said, there's never going to be a time where you can, like, execute a perfect tackle. You talked about the strike zone in MLB. Even with that, the strike zone in MLB doesn't move. Right. Like, it's not supposed to move.
It's not running. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not running. It's not trying to hit you as well. So I really am, like, wondering how they're going to enforce this rule. It kind of goes on a macro scale. Like, it kind of feels, again, very anti-defensey when every other rule in the league enforced right now is kind of in favor of the offense. And, you know, with the NFL coming off of one of their lowest scoring years in recent memory, like, yeah, you banning a hip drop tackle seems like the natural response.
Yeah, and we see the discussions, and sometimes we see comments from former players, you know, saying things like, what are we supposed to do? Just, you know, just let the offense score at will. Like, defensive players feel like they're playing a very difficult job to begin with, doing a very difficult job to begin with one, if not both, arms tied behind their back. You know, we've got the restrictions on contact downfield, you know, defensive holding. Sometimes you're seeing that called away from the flow of the play. And it's like, you're trying to cover somebody like a Devonta Smith who can make a number of different moves in this course of a single route. And yeah, I grabbed him for a second and suddenly it's a first and 10 situation. Like, defensive players are going to be frustrated, I'd imagine, and with reason. They keep getting asked to do their job with a lot of tools at their disposal taken away from them. So it's going to be hard. And look, there's always the idea in the back of our heads when we see rules like this that it's a way to, like you said, increase scoring, to get scoring back up, to give the offense more opportunities, because we like points. We like touchdowns. Like, people watch the game solely for fantasy reasons or other reasons associated with scoring more points in games. Kind of feels like, again, there are legitimate safety concerns with this, with the sort of swivel hip drop tackle. But sometimes, like you said, you're 165-pound slot corner and you get Derrick Henry coming your way. Physics don't lie. Like, physics are physics. Like, Newton was right.
Like, in that situation, you are the fly, and Derrick Henry is the windshield of the Mack truck.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do. So I'm curious to see how they legislate that rule in practice. I'm curious how they're going to help educate refs on how to notice it in real time. And there is, like you said, going to be an eventual, like, third and 12 where there's a hip drop tackle made, and then it's a 15-yard penalty in the playoffs, and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl again. So another rule that was passed I think is really interesting. It was brought up by the Detroit Lions. It's amending and protecting the club's ability to challenge a third rule following one successful challenge. As it stands right now, you can challenge a third time if you get two challenges correct. But now with this new approved rule, you can get one out of two of those challenges correct and get a third challenge. This is really going to come in handy when it comes playoff time, when it comes in those big moments where Now you have an extra challenge in the pocket where you see playoff games that, you know, you wish you had that challenge in.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this sort of rule change because I do think, like, you know, we would hear at times like a challenge on a spot early in the game and you're wondering, oh, is that going to come back to bite them if they lose this? Is it worth it to challenge this play because something more critical might come up down the road and you've lost the ability to challenge that if this one doesn't go your way. Now you can still challenge that play because as long as you get another one right, you can challenge that hypothetical crucial fourth down call later in the game. So I am a fan of this, especially like you sort of alluded to, once you get to the playoffs, like every single play matters, every snap matters. That, you know, week one, early first quarter, fourth down doesn't feel critical. But if it's the AFC Championship game in the first quarter and you're on the road and it looks like you got to stop, the spot goes against you, feels like you want to challenge that one. Now you have more freedom to do that. So I'm a fan of this tweak to the rules, and I think you are too, right?
Yeah, I love this challenge rule being proposed and eventually being approved. I think, like you said, it gives coaches, it gives teams more leeway with what they can and can't challenge. I think it'll bring down to more important moments in the game where you can go, oh, that doesn't look right. Let's challenge it. I mean, you've gotten one wrong, but you've gotten one right already. So as long as you get that one challenge right in that first pocket, you can get another challenge. And I think that might lead to some more challenges being thrown early in a game. So you can kind of store that third one up near the end of the game. It's kind of like when you play fighting games and you have like a finisher in stock, but you're waiting until the end of the fight when everybody's stamina is already low, but you have the finisher already. Yep. You already have that stock. So it's like adding another one early in the game where later on when everything is sort of coming down to the wire, you can make that challenge on something that you already find kind of weird looking. But I really do like this rule. I think this is one of the rules that I was hoping would go in. And ultimately, this was one of the good things that the owners approved during their
We on? Because, again, it looks like the Eagles proposed the 4th-and-20 onside kick, and it was shot down yet again. And I have, for years, sort of been clamoring for that to go through. Because we've all seen the sort of onside kick become an almost impossible play to execute with the changes and the tweaks to the onside kick as it is and the kickoff rules as they are. I like the 4th-and-20 idea. Like, I like that a lot. Like, oh, it's roughly the same odds as an onside kick before the sort of changes were made to the kickoff rules. Let's do it. Like, it'd be certainly exciting. Imagine like a playoff game that it comes down to, well, instead of an onside kick that you know isn't going to go the kicking team's way, 4th-and-20, you at least got a shot. I mean, if you've got a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, you've got a chance to convert that.
I love it. I loved it when they had it in the XFL, and that's a rule that the UFL is going to bring along with them. I think it's incredibly fun. I think, like you said, the onside kick has become sort of a lost art. I guess that's what you would call it. But I really do love what they've done here with the I really do wish the Eagles would get that 4th-and-20 up. But I think what's stopping the owners is they kind of like, oh, kickers are important, the special teams are important. But in reality, what do you want more with the game on the line to get an extra possession? Do you want the kicker on the field to onside kick it, or do you want the guy making $200 million on the field when making those plays in those moments?
So, I mean, if you're A.G. Reid, you'd rather have Patrick Mahomes with a shot than Harrison Butker, as good a kicker as he is, a shot to like pull off. Again, this is the physics hour here. It's hard to execute an onside kick properly anyway, even if you're just in your backyard doing it, let alone with the rules the way they are in the NFL and with 21 other people on the field. You're paying Patrick Mahomes X amount of dollars a year. Give him a shot to convert 4th-and-20, not Harrison Butker and the laws of physics.
So what is one rule that hasn't necessarily been proposed, but one that you think would be incredibly fun to add into the NFL?
I mean, I was a really big fan of, you know, the 4th-and-20, so I'm sad to see that one not sort of go through. I do like how the sort of, was it the XFL had their kickoff rules to begin with, where they're just basically like right next to each other. It was sort of like a free kick kind of situation. Because again, it does seem like, and we understand why the league is doing it, you know, they want to reduce the number of like sprinting 30 yards types of collisions. So then just have the guys next to each other. Like, you're going to get those collisions out of the game, but you could still make the kickoff a more viable play than, you know, all the tweaks they've done with the touchback and moving the kickers up and things like that. I do like the sort of basic idea that now the UFL will be sort of a proven ground for some of these concepts, for some of these ideas. Another one that they had was the sort of sky judge, right? So you've always got sort of a live replay official looking at everything, and they can sort of overturn things. I like that idea as well.
Yeah, that was one that I really wanted to go through. I think it mitigated the amount of serious injuries that we saw in the XFL. And that's something, like you said, again, this is turning into the physics hour.
Yep.
You know, if you're running really fast for 30 yards, whatever you hit is going to feel every single amount of force that you generate over those 30 yards. So you're mitigating that while still having that thrill of a kickoff return. And even then, like, you're seeing a lot more guys now with the NFL kickoffs, they're just taking touchbacks. And that's kind of going back to our point that we talked about with the fourth and 20. Why not just take out the touchback rule and just have make it more interesting on special teams instead of just booting the ball through the end zone? You know,
I think because basically they're moving towards the, you know, possessions just start at the 25.
Yeah.
Like, just forget the kickoff entirely. Possessions start at the 25. People like kickoff returns. People like a kickoff return touchdown. It's an exciting play. And, you know, if you can't do it with the way that they, you know, the safety concerns are right now, then tweak it to the XFL rule, have the players start within 5 yards of each other or something like that, so there's really not that high speed collision that they're trying to get out of the game, and go from there. Otherwise, just start at first and 10 at the 25.
Yeah. And I think special teams still is very important. It's still very fun to see. So I would love to see them adopt that rule for the kickoff. But at the same time, you also have to acknowledge that there are a lot of injuries on kickoff. There's a lot of, you know, they banned the wedge a few years back, yep. You know, because that was just, again, law of physics that was going to hurt. So yep. I would love to see them adopt that rule. I think it can really be helpful for the NFL and still create more of an exciting portion of the sport.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Now that we've talked about all the boring stuff, let's get what we really wanted to be on here and talk about out of the way. The NFL coaches photo. All right. I believe 30 of the 32 coaches are in the photo. I didn't see Mike Tomlin or Matt Eberflus in the photo. I think that they kind of forgot the memo. Nick Sirianni is not in the photo, so that's 29. So I feel like Nick Sirianni would have just had like Big Dom behind him in the photos, and everybody just be like, "Hey, why is there a 33rd coach here? What are we doing?"
I gotta say, first of all, this photo delivers our dear friend Adam. Incredible, brilliant social media producer here at SB Nation, who was at the tournament games in Spokane, who was on TV. If you watched the two games on Sunday, you at least saw his hand because he was sitting right behind the guy in the middle. You know, he said this in our Slack on Sunday. This photo delivers every single year. But what scares me every year this comes out is there are more and more coaches. I just don't know who they are. You know? And like, there's this. Who is it sitting in the front row? There are two coaches in the front row. Canales, then there's two coaches, and then Stefanski. And there's two coaches in between them that I was stared at this Sunday night, like, okay, who are these guys?
So the guy in the hat, that is Dennis Allen, Saints head
coach. That's Dennis Allen.
Dennis Allen. He looks like an undercover cop.
He looks so he looks so different with the hat.
He looks like an NPC. Like, yeah, that's how you dress your character on like any of those RPG games when you first get enough money to buy clothes, but not enough money to actually like buy all the nice clothes. So you just got to go get it.
Yeah. And what is that shirt with the like white and blue stripes on it? I don't like that shirt either.
White and blue stripes. I have no idea who that is.
That's a weird shirt.
Our wonderful producer on the ones and twos, Rochelle Prevett, said that we should try and name them left to right like Travis Kelce did. So if you want to take front row, I'll do back row.
Yeah, I could take front row, okay, because I could start pretty strong here. So on the left, you get Mike McDaniel, who, again, he's ready to go out. Like, he is going to dinner. I know they took this photo at, like, 8 a.m. He's ready to go out.
Mike McDaniel.
Like, he looks good.
Mike McDaniel's ready to get some mimosas.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, look, we're brunching, man. He knew it. We are going brunching. And he's going to be joined by the people next to him because he's got Mike McDonald, new head coach in Seattle, right? That's Mike McDonald.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who definitely came straight from arm day.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number of coaches who went right from the gym to this photo. We'll talk about them. Okay, so you got Mike McDaniel, Mike McDonald. Also, the M&M double right there, I think. They knew what they were doing.
The Mike Max.
They knew what they were doing.
We just missed Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, we just needed Mike McCarthy in there. Okay, so then you got, up with the Packers. We got a little Packers coach right there. Right next to them. So you got, and it's sort of like that whole like coaching tree right there, which is really nice. Then you got Sean McVay right there. You got Sean McDermott. And of course, you knew you were going to get the Harbaugh brothers next to each other.
That is so
Just perfect. And the biggest upset, I think, in this entire photo, and there are many upsets, Harbaugh doesn't have his usual khakis.
I know.
He's got the dress khakis.
Those
look like some navy blue.
He had to bought the fancy khakis for this one. He had to go get those out the closet.
Okay. So then, of course, as he does every year, Andy Reid, right in the middle, Hawaiian shirt, like just ready to go. He's got the Downforce ones on. Like, he is going straight to the breakfast buffet. Like, he's going to see McDermott and everybody. They're going to go out to mimosa time and have a good little time. He's going right to the breakfast buffet. Always going on Diners, Drivers, and Dives with Guy Fieri, which is a great
incredibly. Episode. It's just perfect.
Then you get Canales. Then you got, again, I don't know who that is. Like, I legitimately don't know who that is. Is that Flacco? Like, I'm more comfortable saying that's Flacco with a couple of pounds on than anybody else.
Oh, man. I'm trying to figure out if they're... So, the coaches who weren't in the photo, per Adam Schefter, are Mike Tomlin, Sean Payton, Mike McCarthy, Nick Sirianni, and Matt Eberflus. So that takes out the Bears, Eagles, Cowboys, Broncos, and Steelers.
I have drawn an absolute blank.
I don't know, man.
I'm literally Googling NFL coaches. Is that Brian Callahan?
That's Brian Callahan.
Is it?
I think that is.
Oh, I sure.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, okay.
Good for him.
Good for him. And then Dennis Allen, who I didn't know. And we close it out with Stefanski, Doug Peterson, and Jonathan Gannon, who also, he and McDonald were hitting the curls, man. Because I owe you an apology, Jonathan Gannon. I was not familiar with your game because he's got some arms on him. I am extremely impressed. And he's also got the, like, no-sock loafer look. Like, the young coaches, man. There's going to come a photo is going to surface of the young coach's mimosa-filled brunch that was taken after this photo was taken, and I cannot wait to see it.
I have a sneaky feeling Jonathan Gannon is the wildest. It's always the quietest ones, but I think there has to be, like, some sort of thing with coaches. Like, yeah, I'm going to go get the arm day in before a photo because, of course, like, when you're taking a photo and you do a little, you get some push-ups in real quick.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, was it the same with you in high school and college? Like, you had like the like dumbbells right next to the camera guy on photo day.
Yeah.
So it's like right before you were up, it's like rip off a quick 20 and then you look a little bit better for the photo.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how you do it.
Just get a cute few sets in and then go take the photo, go finish the sets. But I'm going to start where you leave off and I'm gonna start with the what I call the
thumb.
What I call the Reno, Nevada Police Department. Robert Sala is the he's a straight man. He is the he's the bad cop here. He's the one who's all about business. He is the one who never takes any crap from anybody. Dan Quinn is the hardo. He is the police chief who's like 2 weeks away from retirement. He's just here.
Yeah, he's Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, he's Danny Glover, Lethal Weapon. Brian Daboll is the new guy transferred in from San Bernardino. Always loves the specific jelly donut from Dunkin' Donuts. That is the one donut he has to have every morning. That is the Reno, Nevada Police Department coming straight to DVD. It's not going to be released in theaters. That's a DVD movie. You're probably going to find that deep in like Hulu or something. Maybe that goes to Tubi. I feel like that's a Tubi movie. Gerard Mayo next to Robert Sala looks like he came straight from the gym. Like,
well, see, that's the thing about the back row. The back row hit chest day.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're going to get to somebody in another minute who absolutely was putting up three plates aside along with Gerard Mayo before this photo was
done. Oh, yeah. Gerard Mayo was a linebacker coach. He was absolutely hitting chest day. I feel like the conversation with him went, hey, you know, we got photos today and he's in the middle of the set. Like he showed up like straight from the gym. It's not I'm going back to the hotel room, getting a quick shower and then putting something on. I'm coming straight there because I'm going to be like 5 minutes late. You got Zach Taylor over here. I think he's standing behind the absolute like unit. Dan Campbell, you can see him kind of. I feel really bad for Zach Taylor, man. He got stuck in between a rock and a hard place in this photo. Yeah. Like it's really tough. You know, that's like putting like you remember that photo of Bugsy Bogues with Manute Bol? That's where we're at right here with Zach Taylor.
He's between a former tight end and a former linebacker.
Like you cannot win in that situation.
No. The smile on his face shows that
he's like, that. Dang, I could have went over with the Shanahan,
the Mimosa Boys,
normal. But now I look like the weakest guy because I'm next to Dan freaking Campbell, who looks like he absolutely was ripping off 3:15 and taking three plates for a ride in the morning. Like I have to know, do they all get the shirts from the same place?
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're all the same, like the dry fit Nikes are incredible. So they are great. I completely understand.
But also, shout out to Dan Campbell's traps. Okay.
Oh my god.
Because like it's like a triangle.
He was
the back of that man's neck. He was like shrugging three plates aside too.
He was hitting chest and back. Like he's not an ISO workout guy. He is doing it is a push day. He does
every day is a push day for Dan Campbell.
He is push pull, maybe legs if he's feeling it, and he just goes and squats gravity. Next to him is Todd Bowles, who I think also came from the gym, but does different workouts. Different workouts at this stage in his life. He's wearing the quarter zip, you know. I think he was in there getting a little bit of cardio in, maybe doing some light weights, but he was there for the cardio. D'Amico Ryans absolutely was in there taking 3:15 for a ride with Rob Mayo and Dave.
But he showered first.
Yeah.
Because he like split the difference between the Mimosa crew and the gym crew because he hit the gym, he showered, and he's ready to go out because he's in the button down ready to go.
Yeah, he's got the button open. So he's like, okay, I'm here for business, but you know, we're ready to party. We're ready to get down as soon as we leave the building, you know? So we got Shane Steichen next to D'Amico Ryans, who again, look, he just looks like a science teacher.
It looks like there's like an accountant convention at the same place and he stumbled into the wrong picture. He's like, oh, group photo of all the CPAs here? Okay, I'm in.
Somebody forgot to tell him that the Teacher of the Year award was being handed out at the Coronado Springs Resort and not at the Wyndham where they were taking the photo. So shout out to Shane Steichen for looking very out of place, but respect. Kevin O'Connell, who not sneaky athletic. I don't think he's sneaky athletic, but I think he legitimately like is a huge person because like he's probably the tallest person in the photo.
Yeah.
Like, standing up, He also said at the combine that he could he get below 5 in the 40-yard dash.
Right, I absolutely believe
which
it.
Which I believe because I think he ran like – didn't he run like 4.5 or 4.6 at the combine?
I think it was like 4.6 at the combine.
Let me check. Yeah. I'm going to look this up because it's insane. I think he said it on the combine broadcast. Yeah, he ran a 4.61. That's
quick.
Like, that's insane for a quarterback, especially Kevin O'Connell. Like, I think he was in the gym with everybody else, but doing different workouts.
He was doing like a sprint workout. I'm sure. Like sometimes you see on like TikTok where people are like sprinting ridiculously fast and fall off. Yeah,
that's a hit machine guy. Kyle Shanahan again, the Shanahan family. He also looks like someone who would try to sell you a used car. I think he absolutely is. Over at the BMW South Orlando, he kind of got lost as well.
But, do you think he asked O'Connell if he could still sled it just in case?
Yeah,
it's like, look, man, I could turn you into an NFL quarterback right now.
Like, look, we might need you. We might. Yeah. We
could you still throw it? Just let me know.
Like, hey, look, the door's open. We left the key under the mat for you. Yeah. Antonio Pierce absolutely came straight from the gym. Like, he and Jerod Mayo were doing the same workout at the same time, and both of them came straight from the gym. And
I love how you can tell, like, some of the former players absolutely have the, like, arms behind you, like, sticking out the neck, making the neck look big, like, because he nails that pose.
Like, my favorite thing is he and Todd Bowles are both wearing a quarter zip, but it's two completely different methods. Todd Bowles has this like all the way up.
It's like zipped up to here.
Yeah. Pierce like, nah, man. I hit chest today. You gonna see these? You gonna see these, brother? Like this is exactly what I came here to do. I came here to flex. Like this is exactly what my job is, and it kind of fits with what the Raiders have been talking about all offseason with saying like, yeah, we know how to beat Patrick Mahomes. We have the formula. They're gonna flex a little bit. So shout out to Antonio Pierce for flexing and going and bench pressing the entire earth with Jerod Mayo. And then finally, on the end here, we got Raheem Morris, who I think also, like you said, former player doing the behind-the-back thing, got the chest going. The chest is also going. Like that's
it's hilarious how the back row went chest day.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling that some of them knew, like,
where they were going to be.
Yeah. Like if you're a taller person, you're either going to be like, you're going to be in the back row because you got to stand. So you're going to see my upper half. Like, yeah, I'm going to do a little chest workout, maybe hit a little push-ups a little bit before I put on the shirt. So yeah, you got to get a little chest day. I think Shane Steichen missed the memo. I think he forgot like, oh, it's chest day today. Dang. He heard chest day and thought they were talking CPA. Like, he thought they were talking treasure chest, like from Minecraft.
The shirt he's wearing, it almost looks like it just got photoshopped on. Like, it just looks out of place. It looks like, is it like just like a cotton t-shirt? Like, I can't even tell.
I'm telling you, he is about to give the greatest lesson on geometry to some seventh graders down. Or he's probably like the ninth grade or the 10th grade trigonometry teacher at Dr. Phillips High School, which is right down the way. Like he's probably like their favorite teacher. You know, he just looks like he would be a teacher if he wasn't drawing up the most devious of RPOs. I still can't get over the Reno Nevada Police Department.
I think that's probably my favorite part. Who do you think, because we got a couple of like rookie coaches made the best sort of debut in this photo?
Really interesting. I think I'm going to go with Antonio Pierce because Raheem Morris has been a head coach. I kind of feel like we can't like use him to be like first year head coach. He's been a head coach before, but I'd say Antonio Pierce. You know, he got to have a little bit of a flex. I think, like I said, he and Jerod Mayo were both at the gym, both hitting chest, both doing the same. They were working out together as former linebackers. So he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to just throw on this quarter zip, keep it open, got the chains on. Like, you know exactly. You know who he coaches immediately, like off rip. You know that is the Las Vegas Raiders head coach because that is a Raiders coach.
I feel like I want to say Mayo just because, like, only two people don't have a collar, okay? One's Mike McDaniel, but he's got the hoodie and he's got the shirt underneath. So, okay. He's just wearing the Hanes t-shirt, man.
The way I
like that's the when you show up your first day of, you know, of double sessions, you get like the gray shirt and the white shirt in your locker. That's what he's wearing. Like the first day he showed up as a rookie in New England, that t-shirt was handed in his locker. Yeah, that's what he's wearing.
That's just throwing on the dry fit and getting the class. You just gotta get the class at some
point. You just gotta show up.
Yeah, you just gotta show up. I like to see it as both Mike McDaniel and Gerard Mayo. Both wore like non-collar shirts. Gerard Mayo didn't know the photo was being taken and just showed up. Mike McDaniel knew that there was a photo being taken, but was like, screw that. I'm not wearing a collar shirt, man. Y'all are not going to see me out here in the button down from Ross. I'm going to be out here dripped out. Like I also think a really cool thing is looking at the shoes, and you can tell Kevin Stefanski has gone on some dunks. Sean McDermott is wearing low top dunks, which he's got on the Panda Dunks, which also very funny about Sean McDermott. He's the only one wearing a suit, which feels so fitting. It is fitting that Sean McDermott is the only one there in a suit. Come on, man. It's hot. It's in Orlando. I live in Orlando. I know it's hot. I know he's got to be sweating. Yeah. I know.
He's sweating right through that
thing. You know what? Counterpoint. I think he had on the jacket because he sweat through the shirt. I think you got to go because he's sitting in the front because he's short.
Sit in the front, man. I can't show that off. I can't show that I'm sweating already.
You can have them all wet out there.
Yeah, because you know what the headlines will look like. Matt Warren at Buffalo Rumblings. Oh, seat's really hot under Sean McDermott. You can't have that.
You cannot have that. So you got to go full power move. Got to go with the suit. I think John and Jim Harbaugh are – it's so funny, like in a very much like you can tell those two are brothers, but you can tell which one is the chaotic one.
Yeah, you can absolutely.
You can tell that Jim Harbaugh smiles like he used to have silver caps in his teeth as a kid. Like he used to be biting people, and John was like, "Hey, you can't do that."
Is it a bit of a power move? Canales being the only other one other than Reed wearing shorts?
Oh yeah. You gotta be. I think Dave Canales also looks like a tennis trainer. Like he's got on the golf fit. Like he's gonna go hit a few balls around at on the links, you know. I think so we talked about the best statements. I also think Robert Saleh again. I think Robert Saleh could have gone with a tighter shirt, but knew like last year after everybody said he looked like he was on steroids, he was like, I can't do that again. I cannot draw attention to me or the Jets anymore after what happened last year.
Also, Peterson, the only one wearing a like team logo polo, seems to fit perfect.
It's so fitting for him. Like he just looks, again, he also looks like a car salesman. Yeah. But he's the weekend guy. You know, he comes in on Fridays and Saturdays, you know. He's a bit more chill. I think the hair is incredibly funny. It looks so windswept. But he needs a hat. He gave his hat to Dennis Allen. I think he and Dennis Allen both came in with one hat, but it switched places. Dennis Allen just looks like an undercover cop, man. I'm sorry.
Was Dable happy that it wasn't so sunny this time? Because wasn't he like sunburned?
Yeah, he was. I know he had to be happy. And I also know he also is kind of miffed because he was the only short person standing up. And he got put next to both the former players and Robert Saleh and Dan Quinn, who also both kind of share the same like bald goatee look.
Yeah.
So he by default has to be with them, but also looks like he comes up to like his chest. So I know he's got to feel a little pissed about that.
A little bit.
Yeah, I think Dan Quinn also kind of looks like a thumb with a goatee drawn on it. Like, I don't know, man. His head is so, like, round. I don't know. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. He's just sitting there.
It's so round.
I'm looking at the photo and I'm like, I can see it. I can see it being a thumb. But yeah, I think, something else that I think would be really cool if, like, you know, I feel like this is sort of the NFL equivalent of the media days that at college football programs have. And I feel like that's a right time to start asking coaches things that have nothing to do with football, you know? I want to know who makes the best food. And Andy Reid has talked with good friend of the show, Charles McDonald, talked about his mac and cheese recipe.
Mac and cheese recipe.
Which sounds phenomenal. He was once again on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives talking sandwiches with Guy Fieri. I need to know who the best chef in the NFL is. It can be head coach, position coach, coordinator. I want to know who the best coach, best chef is.
I feel like it's Fangio, right? Last year the spaghetti meatballs.
Yeah, he's the only one that is on like record. Like people saying like his meatballs are really good and also will not share the recipe.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's usually a telltale right there. Like Reed, credit to him, gave Charles the mac and cheese recipe like in the airport. Tremendous. But when you get a recipe, you're like, no, not sharing it. You know you got something cooking there.
Like you absolutely know that somebody has.
And I seem to recall when the Broncos hired Fangio, they did shoot a video of him making the meatballs, but they wouldn't like show ingredients and things like that because he wouldn't let.
Yeah. I also think Jonathan Gannon is probably the worst chef of the group. I feel like he tries to cook something and it burns. Like
he's too busy hitting arm day.
Yeah.
He doesn't have time for cooking.
He not overseasons. He kind of goes hard on the flipping, you know?
Yeah.
Because
yeah, there's always that person at the grill, right? When they flip too early and they start flipping too much. And it's like, no. Gotta have some patience here.
Yeah. I feel like Dan Campbell absolutely knows his way around the grill.
100%.
Absolutely knows his way around the grill. He's from Texas too. Went to Texas A&M. That's a man who knows his way around the grill.
I want to see his brisket next to Lincoln Riley's.
Oh, it's going to be like a tale of two different cities. Lincoln Riley's, you could probably throw that as a football. That's what Caleb Williams used his pro day. He used a Lincoln Riley brisket. That's what he tempted. The Lincoln Riley brisket. Dan Campbell absolutely knows how to cook a brisket. I think Andy Reid, obviously, best chef of the group. I think he absolutely knows. What's going in there. I think he's been on Earth long enough to try different stuff and also talk to a bunch of people. Like the Andy Reid tree kind of spans different groups and different people. So I feel like he knows a bunch of different recipes from a bunch of different people. And
I feel like he's got one of those like recipe card holder things with like a bunch of hand scrawled recipes, which is also when you know you're cooking with something good there. Like when you get to like print out stuff, no. You need the stuff that's passed down generations.
He keeps it next to his playbook. They're both like 3 billion pages long, and one of them is just called Banana Swirl.
Didn't he tell Charles that he had his mac and cheese recipe on his phone?
Yes.
Yeah, which is incredible.
It's the funniest thing ever. I want to try this mac and cheese. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was a time when I was going to do it too, because it's got, I think you told Charles, it's got like 7 different cheeses in it.
Like, it just, 7 different cheeses is so, I don't want to say it's overkill, but, you know, like, I kind of think it works, especially with the blend, you know? I feel like you can.
Well, also, look, I love that it starts, because I just pulled it up. 1/4 pound bacon, 8 slices, parentheses, probably optional. Yeah. There's no probably about that when you start it that way. So you've got Fontina, sharp cheddar, mozzarella, parm, gouda, and gruyere. So you've got 6 cheeses in there.
But he also said like maybe 5 would be good. But no, if he gives you 6 cheeses, you're using all.
You're using the 6.
You better use 6 of those cheeses. So. I really do think that that'd be a pretty fun story, talking to coaches about who's the best chef you've ever, like among any coaches in the NFL. They can be position coaches, they can be coordinators. I feel like there are a lot who.
What would be hypothetically the most surprising answer to that question in your mind?
The most
like if somebody was like, okay, this is the best chef, you'd be like, what?
I think the most surprising answer for me would probably be Kevin Stefanski. He kind of looks like a guy who's more like, I'm not exactly like a stiff around the in the kitchen, but he's more of a, we're gonna order in, you know, we're gonna go and get food.
Yeah. See, I'm going to sit with Mike McDonald, because it seems to me like McDonald's going out, right? Like, I'm young, I'm in South Beach. I'm going to go out and take advantage of this. Later in life, I'll figure my way around a kitchen. But now, no.
Yeah, I also think another underrated one would potentially be Sean McVay. He's been around like LA. He's been around a lot of famous people, a lot of famous cooks. I feel like he knows how to. I feel like the Shanahan McVay tree kind of just shares recipes, like their own like little family, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually they probably will never see the light of day. It'll probably be like a Vic Fangio thing. But I know the cookouts, the hangouts probably have some good food.
Absolutely. 100%.
So we're gonna bring Rachelle to the stage to discuss what she thought were the most interesting points about hip drop, other tackles, and also
NFL chefs.
Which coach we think bench presses the most.
Oh my gosh, that was hands down my favorite like segment out of today's show. Like, I'm glad that you guys went with that. But I'm gonna start with the hip drop tackle ban and you guys' points on that. JP, I really, really liked your point about how just all feels like anti-defense. Like, how are they supposed to do their job if there's like all of these different rules continuing to be in place? And I also liked how you mentioned how like it feels like the people who created this rule don't really understand like what goes into like making a tackle in the league. And so it's just all around like unfair to the defense. And then when you guys got into like the fun rules to add, Mark, I really liked how you touched on like the XFL, UFL, and how like the sky judge to overlook things, like that would be kind of cool to implement into the NFL, and also their kickoff rule that they have to prevent like injuries and like how they like line up. And then, like I said, you guys both were hilarious when it came to like the coaches' photos. Some of the ones that I thought had like me dying over here. I think Mark, you did the first row. And so you were talking about how Mike McDaniel looked like he's going to brunch, which he definitely does. Like the hoodie. I'm just like, what? There were two people who I feel like, did you guys not know you were taking this picture? Mike McDaniel and Gerard Mayo. I just, what? Like, you knew where you were going. That is not acceptable. I don't know, whatever. But I guess like you guys said, it was hot. So maybe that's why they felt like they could pull that off. Also, when you guys were just talking about the people who were hitting the gym, I was crying. Mark, you said Andy Reid has the air, like the Dad Force ones. That sent me all the way. I was like, what? But the person who you guys said made the like best first impression or like statement, I think I'm going to go with JP, Antonio Pierce, because I think Gerard, I think Mark, you said Mayo, and I think his shirt just did not do it for me, so I had to go with Pierce. But both of you guys killed it today. This was a really, really fun show, so shout out to both of you guys. I'm going to give it to Mark.
I'm stunned by that. It's incredible. I thought JP kind of crushed it, especially because I think it's fair to point out, JP knew his entire row. Like, I blanked when we came to Dennis Allen, who, like JP said, looks like an undercover cop right here. And I just did not know who that was in the front row. I didn't realize that was Callahan until we sort of pointed it out. So I think JP, you know, I'm going to, like, you know, Tom Brady in Super Bowl 51. Yeah, okay, I got the MVP today. But it's really, I'm going to give the trophy and everything to JP because he got the entire back row right.
Fair. That is absolutely fair. Thank you. Thank you to both you and Rachelle, Mark, for hanging out, for kind of helping us out. You know, we had a little bit of a light ship today, but I think we made it through pretty fun. I think we had a lot of fun on here. Also, you know, just don't wear Hanes to the photo. Yeah. Or you're going to kind of look out of place unless you're sitting next to Antonio Pierce, who bench presses gravity.
Great show, guys.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.